We are back. It is a long-awaited episode of the Not Another Bucking podcast. We've been on a bit of a hiatus, figuring some things out, thinking about how we want to approach this upcoming season, taking a little refresher, but we're back. We'll be so on a consistent basis. And what a time to come back. What a time to be alive, really, with 2 days until the 2024 NFL draft. So we're going to have a fun show. Here to break it down is the incomparable Nate Kreckman of the Kreckman and Lindahl Show every weekday afternoon on 92.5 FM Altitude Radio. Nate, man, we got draft talk. We could talk about all kinds of number of things. We could break down all 31 songs of the Tortured Poets Department. We could talk new uniforms, which I'm sure we will. We'll talk Zach Wilson, but this is our podcast. We can do whatever we want. Let's talk.
I have takes on
first.
All those things, by the way, but yeah,
I'm sure you do. I'm not promising we're not going to get to them, by the way, but, let's start where you were like last night. I think we had two different viewing experiences of this. We're recording this Tuesday morning, in the after hours of one of the coolest basketball games we've seen, even for a team that just won a championship last year. The Denver Nuggets beat the Los Angeles Lakers in game two of the Western Conference first round on Jamal Murray's buzzer beating shot over Anthony Davis. What was it like? Cause we had different viewing experiences. I was at home.
Yep.
My wife fell asleep on my lap after a 12-day shift at the hospital. She comes home, she crashes on. She's like falling asleep as Austin Reeves hits the shot to put the Lakers up 20 with 10 minutes left in the third quarter. And I wanted to go to bed. I was just like, okay, that's fine. I got things to do. This is, I need to wake up early. So I was about to nudge her, just be like, don't fall asleep here. Let's go to bed. But for whatever reason, I was just like, okay, let's just, you know, see how they respond. And, you know, by the end of this game, they're trading baskets and I'm just sitting here quietly trying to be a dutiful husband, not to wake her up. But then he hits the shot and I go, holy shit. And I just scare the bejesus out of her. But you were there, man. What was it like in that building last night?
Bedlam, just absolute bedlam, down 20. And the vibes were bad, man. That team, the Nuggets.
And they subsist on vibes. So
yes, they do. And we can say this about the Nuggets because they won the game. They were awful last night.
Awful.
They played atrociously. That first half is as bad as they could play. Everything is going the Lakers' way, but they stick to it. They stick with it. Nikola Jokic is inevitable. Of course, Anthony Davis is going to fall apart and score no points in the fourth quarter of that game. And I was particularly proud of myself. I tweeted at the end of the third quarter, after Jamal Murray had come back into the game and airballed a floater.
Yeah.
I just tweeted because I watched it.
But he called the bullshit floater after the game.
Yeah. And I've seen it before, and I tweeted just, this guy's going to have a fourth quarter. Because he always does. And he goes 6 for 8, and he scores 14 points, and he hits the game winner over Anthony Davis. And I for some reason, this thought popped into my head this morning, Nick. I grew up in Chicago, and I grew up as a Bulls fan. And one of the most famous shots in playoff history, and I was thinking about this because it was the first round, I believe, was Jordan over Elo, right? And, you know, the famous call, you know, Jordan at the foul line, you know, it's in, the Bulls win. MJ jumps up and he does like the fist pump and he almost punches Craig Elo in the face while he's going nuts and celebrating. And it's an iconic NBA shot. We can all see the highlight in our head when you bring it up. That was over Craig Elo. No disrespect to Craig Elo, fine NBA player, but Jamal Murray made that shot over Anthony Davis, over 7 foot tall, self-proclaimed best defensive player in the league, Anthony Davis, and that was who Jamal made that shot over. That's like, it's a more difficult shot. It's a better shot than Jordan over Craig Elo. And I know it only goes on like Jordan's somewhere, you know, sort of in the middle of his list of career highlights, but it's an iconic NBA shot. And we all know the highlight, and Jamal Murray topped it last night in terms of early playoff buzzer beaters. It's the greatest ever.
Yeah. Wow. It's certainly in, you know, somebody, I was talking to somebody about this, because they're debating whether it was like the biggest shot in Nuggets history. And obviously this is a team that won a championship last year,
right.
But they also went 16-4, and there weren't really a lot of, there were close games, but there weren't really many that hung in the balance on the final possession or final two possessions of the game. Like, and when you're talking about pursuing this championship, they're going to, at every opportunity they have to shorten a series or whatever the case might be, like, they need it. So yeah, it's in the first round for a team that went all the way through and went 16-4 last year in the playoffs. But like, I mean, it probably, not to be too prisoner of the moment, but it probably has a, it probably has a pretty good case.
The Jokic over against the Lakers, the step back, the chuck.
Yeah.
You know, that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That one's so iconic. But I think there was like 2 minutes left in the game or whatever it was when that shot happened versus what happened last night, which was to win the game. Jamal falls into the bench. He said after the game, he didn't see it go through. He only heard and he felt the mob. Anthony Davis falls into the bench.
The worst possible way that you could have to experience getting the buzzer beater score in your face, and then they're celebrating on top of you. Like,
LeBron's got to go like elbow his way in to rescue his buddy Anthony Davis. Then AD sits there in the post game and throws the organization under the bus and throws his coach under the bus. Just what a disaster for those guys. And to have lost, and that's the way you've lost 10 in a row now to the Nuggets, is you had a 20-point lead that you blew on the road. Unbelievable that they could blow that. I don't know how you mentally come back from that if you're the Lakers. And I know LeBron's an all-time great, but how do you mentally come back from that?
Yeah, I don't. You don't. And again, like, I don't. The Nuggets had lost that game. It was like you said, we played as poor as we could possibly play. We fought back in it. You know, you're not really, like, overly concerned in terms of like their path forward, like if they had lost, just because of, like, to your point, how poorly they played. But
yeah,
now if you're the Lakers, like you just start to think there's like a curse involved in this. If it is feeling now very Broncos Chiefs-y, right? Where for 8 years, you're just like, it doesn't really matter what you do. You're not going to beat that team. And the Broncos, like the Lakers have done, were close in a lot of those games, relatively speaking.
You know what? Here's the professional segue for us. Okay, sometimes sometimes difficult things happen. Like, sometimes you trade multiple first and second round picks for a quarterback, and then give him $160 million guaranteed, and then you cut him before that contract extension even kicks in. But you know what? You got to dust yourself off, and you got to do another draft. You got to get back out there. George Payton, you got to do it, buddy. You can do it.
We're back. You got to fill your cup back up and get back into the, get back up to the free throw line and get ready to knock him down again. Yeah, it's draft week, man. And it's sort of hard to segue from the emotive high of that to
the Broncos.
You know, gee, who are the Broncos? The team that has not made the playoffs since 2015.
Let's talk some Zach Wilson.
Number 12 pick in the draft. Oh, man. That's where we start, right? Because, look, the last time the Broncos had a first-round pick, it was 2021. They had the 9th overall pick. They needed a quarterback. The only guy that they had in the room at the time was Drew Lock, who, in his first season as a starter there in 2020, wasn't good. It came on the heels of his strong close to his rookie year, the excitement that he was going to be sort of the guy. He gets hurt early in Pittsburgh, never really puts it together, COVID year, all those sorts of things. You knew that he wasn't going to be the unquestioned answer as George Payton took over in 2021, but you had this number 9 pick, a lot of quarterbacks in that 2021 class. The Broncos trade for Teddy Bridgewater 2 days before the draft. They say all the things about how, this doesn't change our quarterback picture, but it did. That was exactly who they wanted to be their quarterback. And they drafted Pat Surtain, which had been the plan all along. This time, now it's their first round pick since then. Same situation. Jared Stidham, guy in the room, certainly not viewed as the answer. Trade for a guy in Zach Wilson, but a little bit different this time around, Nate. To me, when I saw that trade yesterday of the former number two pick from that 21 draft, who has completed 57% of his career passes, 23 touchdowns, 25 interceptions,
so
a sack rate of 10.2% in his 3 years as a starter, sacked more often even than Russell Wilson. You don't view that as any sort of like indictment on what they would or wouldn't do at the quarterback position, right?
No, it can't change any of your draft strategy. This merely has to be, we needed another quarterback.
You needed a body. You needed a quarterback
exactly.
in the room.
You needed a dude, and Zach Wilson has played NFL games. He's 2-1 in his career against the Broncos, so that's something. Two of his 12 wins came against this very franchise, which is probably a greater indictment of the Broncos than anything else.
He is now the quarterback on the roster with the most wins at Empower Field.
On the roster. Is that true? It is true.
Jared Stidham has the one. The Danucci. You could conclude a Danucci preseason win that maybe he and Stidham would share. But if you're
Danucci and you see that news yesterday, what are you thinking? Just what do I have to do? Come on. I'm not better than that guy.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
All right. With Zach Wilson. It's bleak, obviously. Like, this guy is one of the biggest busts in NFL history. And Andy and I, yesterday on our show, we did a pretty good job, I thought. We do a good job every day. But we did a good job, I thought.
Must listen up radio.
You can't miss it. Unless you really have to. But the way things went for him in New York, it was brutal. Just an awful situation. Like, I don't know another young quarterback that could have succeeded in that situation. That's such a terrible franchise. And then the way that things went for him last year, Rodgers is there. He tears his Achilles. And then Diana Rossini and Zach Rosenblatt, the great report that they did for The Athletic that was really breaking down what happened. Rodgers ghosted Zach Wilson, essentially was not there to be an ear for him to lean on. The organization benched him for Tim Boyle and said, you're pretty much done. Then Tim Boyle was awful and Aaron Rodgers wasn't going to come back. So then they had to go back to Zach Wilson and be like, yeah, you should probably be ready to play. Reports were that Zach Wilson was basically like, screw you guys. I don't want to play for you again. Then it gets leaked. Rodgers is trashing everybody on the McAfee show. Salah is apparently demanding phones and like essentially like taking his employees to The Hague to try and find out who amongst you leaked this information. And then Zach Wilson's got to go back and play in the middle of all that because it is such a terrible look. I think he did come back and beat Houston, by the way, after that. So he had that going for him in the very least. But what a awful situation for that guy. I know that he has not held up his end of the bargain, but in the grand hope for a change of scenery and environment, perhaps being the break that a player needs, maybe, just maybe, this could be it for Zach Wilson. I say all this with the note, it almost probably definitely won't be, but but if it's possible, this could be it.
Yeah, I think you nailed all of that. The only thing you forgot is that the owner of the franchise also essentially at the end of the season put all the problems that the New York Jets football team had in 2023, this spectacular collapse of a year, by saying at the end of the season, well, we definitely need a better backup quarterback. Like, if you think Zach Wilson was the biggest problem for the New York Jets last year, I don't know what to tell you.
How does a man that employs Nathaniel Hackett say that out loud? The guy that signs Nathaniel Hackett's paychecks said that out loud.
Or I mean, let's talk about, like, you get Alan Lazard because that's who Aaron Rodgers wants. Mm-hmm. Sign him to this massive contract, and he's just, awful.
Non-existent.
And, a huge just, and they've had so much of that offensive staff turnover. Mm-hmm. There's been all those sorts of things. Zach Wilson certainly owns his share of the blame. Some people I talked to from that area said that, like, it's – there is this idea that he needs to become better at accepting hard coaching, which, you know, now he has Sean Payton as his coach. Yeah, so that will be interesting to see. But yeah, like the whole, obviously we always, whenever somebody moves, you say the words change of scenery. The reality is that very rarely has a change for a quarterback. Like didn't help Carson Wentz. It doesn't help these guys. It's not going to help Trey Lance. If you don't have it more often than not,
Ryan Tannehill,
Tannehill. Yep. Best case scenario. I think that you have there. It's not unprecedented. It's just not the most common thing. Like I was even going back and looking at the stats, right? Because the reason that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers didn't re-sign Jameis Winston after his rookie contract was over was he had this massive amount of interceptions. He took a ton of sacks. Yep. Mm-hmm. Took a ton of sacks. And so, you know, I thought in my mind, I'm like, okay, he record-wise, he played a lot better under Sean Payton. And he did have a stretch where he threw 14 touchdowns and 3 interceptions in one of his stints there. But when you went back and look at it, his time in New Orleans, like his interception rate wasn't all that different. His sack rate wasn't all that different. Like it didn't change. He was put though in a better situation in which the pieces around him were better, and he was able to have a little bit of success. I don't discount that that's possible for Zach Wilson, but when you're talking about best case scenarios, to me, it's just nothing more than you get into this season because A, there's injuries. B, this is a season in which the Broncos aren't going to have much in the way of expectations. It could go off the rails early. And you get in and you do something with that chance, but that even in that wouldn't like sort of create a long-term commitment to him after this year. This is the last year of his rookie contract, obviously not going to pick up the fifth year option on his rookie contract. So, you know, best case scenario, he gets into the game. Like, I don't see there being a chance that, let's say the Broncos don't draft a quarterback on Thursday night in the first round, which is certainly a very real possibility. Right. And they don't get a pick into the second round, maybe, that allows them to draft Michael Penix or Bo Nix, and maybe not even get Spencer Rattler in the third. So they don't get any of that top wave of 7 or 8 guys. Then it becomes a, you know, competition between Jarrett Stidham and Zach Wilson. I don't even really see a way in which Wilson would be, you know, certainly the favorite in that competition.
No.
He's no, just too far behind the eight ball.
At the moment, I still think Jared Stidham's the week one starter. Yeah. I still very much think that with Zach Wilson as the backup. And again, whomever the rookie may be, if that rookie is even in the building, like the Broncos, one of the big things this trade makes it is the Broncos don't have to draft a quarterback. They probably definitely still should, but they don't have to draft a quarterback. And that to me is a big change in what they need to accomplish going into this draft.
Yeah, right. And again, probably doesn't change the first round calculus, but yeah, you're talking just a body to have in the room. Mm-hmm. You know, now they don't have to do that. They have 3 quarterbacks on the roster. You would think that they would probably sign an undrafted free agent quarterback probably in the event they don't draft one, because you want a couple of arms in rookie camp, like so that they would add a quarterback in some form or fashion. But you're right. They don't need a guy to say like, hey, we need to draft a guy that could be the third string quarterback, the practice squad quarterback. That could be mm-hmm. Ben DiNucci. So I agree with you that's the only real practical effect it has. Like you're saying, we don't need to draft the body. We could do without that necessity. But in terms of what it changes for the potential of adding a franchise guy, it doesn't. But here we are, Nate. We're 2 days away, and you know, you start to hear things today, like the New York Giants are getting more and more interested in trading up so that they could draft a quarterback who could play, and they can move on from Daniel Jones as early as next offseason. Don't really have to play him this year. We know that the Vikings are in that market. They have the 2 first round picks. The Raiders are looming there at number 13, and that's to say nothing of the fact that we know the Bears will draft Caleb Williams. The Washington Commanders have all but told teams, you know, you can call, but we're not moving out of 2. Yep. Then it really just comes down to whether the Patriots are going to stick around at 3 and draft QB3 of the draft, which I think odds are that they will, although I think that's the one inflection point of this first round. I mean, it just doesn't seem like there is a viable path outside of giving up a 2025, 2026 first rounder, Pat Surtain, and moving to number 3, giving the Patriots an offer that they can't refuse. But my gosh, you just better be right if that's what you're going to do.
You can't trade Pat Surtain now. He's in the every single promo shot for the new uniforms.
Right.
All of that material would be obsolete now. You can't trade Pat Surtain. You got merchandise to move. So to me, that's off the table. But in all seriousness, also, don't trade Pat Surtain.
Yeah, that'd be a bad idea.
Only good player that you have at the moment. And again, like, going, let's say it's New England at number three, and you hear the whispers the Patriots could be looking to move out at number three, and it's a franchise that sort of built their destiny kind of on the backs of trading back in the draft. They did an awful lot of that, and there was a great piece in The Athletic last week about draft strategy and about how trading back is the most viable and successful path in a draft. And maybe nobody New England, yeah, nobody does it exactly.
Yeah.
But maybe New England is a team that could operate in that way. But the Broncos just don't have the ammunition. They don't have the dudes. They need first round picks. Like, and they're also probably going to be a lousy team this year. So you're going to have a high pick next year. So don't trade away a future high pick right now. This organization just get yourself back on the rails. That is my hope so badly for this draft, is just get yourself back in a good path, and all of the mistakes, all of the sins of the past, you can get through. And the NFL salary cap is, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, the vice grip that we make it out to be. You can work around a bunch of crap. Even Russ's dead cap number next year, to continue to add things and get back to a winning place relatively quickly. But to do all that, you got to draft young, cheap players. And you have to have picks to be able to get those guys. Broncos got to stop giving up all the picks. They're in this place because of everything they gave up for Russ, everything they gave up for Sean Payton. How about you just start drafting players?
Add good players to the roster. I think we complicate this a lot, but but it's, again, I've overused this analogy, but it's just like, if you put all the names of AFC West players in a bag, you pour them all out, you start draft, you create four teams that get to start pulling from these players. There's just not a lot of Broncos players that are getting pulled into those piles early on. You know, you have Pat Surtain as maybe the fourth or fifth best player when accounting for premium positions in the AFC West. After that, it's such a drop off. It's such an intense drop off. Like, who is the second best player on the Denver Broncos right now? Is it Quinn Meinerz? Is it Cortland Sutton? Is it, like, who's the second best player on this team?
Marvin Mims.
I mean, that's Zach, what we're talking about here.
Allen, Nick Benito, I guess.
The second best player on the Chiefs is Chris Jones. The second best player on the Raiders is even either Davante Adams or Max Crosby. The second best player, you know, the Chargers are kind of in this similar boat. Their talent needs a lot of work, but their second best player is what? Khalil Mack? Joey Bosa,
Slater,
Slater. So yeah, no, I mean,
they get good play. Yeah, they got a couple of good players. All the receivers are gone.
Just sitting here thinking that the receivers are gone, but they've got the defensive linemen. They've got, they've got the offensive tackle there. They have that. But the Broncos,
they have nothing.
It's so devoid of talent. Even like some of your quote unquote better players, like Garrett Bowles, contract year, all those sorts of things. You just say, The most real thing we need to do is add good players to the roster. They could certainly do that with the 12th pick. And
Nick, when they put out the promo shot for the new uniforms yesterday, and it was like seven, eight, nine players it was in a row. As I looked at it, I had to go like, wait, who is that guy again? We're talking about the Denver Broncos.
Right.
And and I had to be like, oh, Alex. Yeah, that's right. Alex Singleton. I remember that. Oh, Tim Patrick. Yeah, I remember him.
Oh, yeah. He's back. Zach Allen. Yeah.
Yeah.
It
was so weird. They got no good players. So draft dudes. They have to draft dudes. And you know what? If there is a team that is hot to trot enough to go up to number 12, trade the frick out of it. Get yourself a second round pick and just acquire more and more guys. I think the Broncos just have to have a sound draft strategy this year. That said, like, if Drake May somehow falls and the Broncos get drunk and trade up for him, I'm going to be pumped because I love the content. Yeah. But also, like, I don't think that's going to happen. So just be disciplined.
Yeah, that's what I would say. And I, you know, again, you mentioned that article. It's written by my colleague, Alec Lewis, where, you know, he talks about the market inefficiency is giving back, because what teams don't do enough is account for the fact that there's so much luck involved in this dating process, right? They're very high on their own skills, their own evaluation talents, which I don't know if there's been anybody in the league more boastful about their ability to evaluate quarterbacks and other positions as Sean Payton. He's like come out and said, we're going to be really good at this.
Yes, yeah, we think everyone else stinks and we're good. All right, dude.
That's a statement to make. So like, you know, but on the back end of that, like here's George Payton, who was part of this Minnesota regime that Alex cited in the piece where, you know, Spielman is saying like, yeah, people say I would trade my own mother for a 7th round pick. Like that's the school that George Payton went to. And then the other anecdote is about, you know, Mickey Loomis, which really was Sean Payton in New Orleans, and how often they traded up for the guy. Yeah. You know, so it's a very interesting thing that these two guys with really differing, you know, backgrounds, and we look, I don't want to really get into like the you know, the final say and, you know, George's, you know, what his future is here after missing so badly on the Russell Wilson thing, the Nathaniel Hackett thing. But just for this draft and how they evaluate players and how they make these decisions, I thought it was really interesting when they had their pre-draft press conference, they're both talking about how like any arguments that you have about players, about personnel, you solve those before the draft, you turn on the film, you make a haircut bet, all these kind of things. But then I thought it was really interesting how there was kind of a little bit of a pause there. And George Payton says there are times in this draft where Sean Payton will slam his hand on the table and say, I want this guy. That was last year. They move up to get Marvin Mims. They move up to get Riley Moss. Like, I just don't know whether Sean Payton is going to be able to restrain his better nature, which is to make an aggressive move. I mean, this is a guy who's 60 years old, I think, who wants to show everybody that he can make magic happen, that he can turn it around in a year if only he were to get the guy at quarterback who will do what he says and has the capability to like elevate the offense. Like,
but the thing he's got to know though, Nick, is like this roster is not in position to help with the magic, you know, like this does feel like, all right, if the Broncos, let's say JJ McCarthy or Jaden Daniels or Drake May, any one of those guys gets drafted by Denver and was the week one starter for this team, I'd be really pessimistic about that guy's opportunity to be able to succeed. And quite frankly, a little bit about his future, just because of what's around him. Like, you got to be able to walk into a good situation. One of the things the Bears have going for themselves is Caleb Williams is going to walk through the door. And that was a 7-10 team last year. There's some good players on that team. Like, number one picks, they never get to walk into situations like what Caleb Williams will walk into in Chicago. And I'm not saying like that roster is up there with Baltimore's or anything else like that, but that's a pretty good team for a rookie quarterback to step into with good skill position talent around him. And again, as somebody that grew up in Chicago and was a Bears fan for a big chunk of my life, it's about as good as I've ever seen it. And so that it so rarely happens, and Denver is not set up to be able to help out a young quarterback right now.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting. Another colleague of mine, Ted Wynn, he wrote a story in which he was sort of grading the quarterback needy teams by their situation, in terms of like who is best set up to support a rookie quarterback. The Bears, as you mentioned, were number one for all those reasons. And I think for him, the number two team was the Vikings, right? Who again could be in this mix because they have the ammunition to move up. You know,
good coach and Justin Jefferson, yeah.
They have a great coach. They have Justin Jefferson, TJ Hawkinson, Jordan Addison, pretty decent offensive line, you know, a decent enough run game. Their defense needs work, but there is enough there. You know, and now you have another quarterback in that room, Sam Darnold, who's shown that he can be a backup. I think he's not anybody's idea of like a savant mentor that's just going to elevate you, but he's a solid guy, you know, that would be there in that room. So there's a lot good there. He had the Broncos number three, And it was largely just because of Sean Payton, because of his reputation as a play caller. But again, to me, like, that is putting a lot on on Sean Payton, just saying that like he alone is going to be able to look. I know this guy is a good coach, but we're just sort of talking about like pixie dust that he's just going to be able to like lift him by himself when there's so much else wrong with the situation right now.
Yeah, this franchise, again, like this is where the discipline is so critical. This is where this organization just has to say, okay, whether it's acquiring more picks or just sticking in place and doing what we got to do, they've got to do it. I also just this is my feel on this draft, Nick, and tell me if you think I'm crazy. All right, obviously Caleb Williams is going to go number one. All right, Washington at two will take Jaden Daniels or Drake May. Whomever is left, Drake May will go or Jaden Daniels will go number three. Don't fall into the JJ McCarthy trap. Okay. To me, JJ McCarthy is the trap door in this draft that's I think somebody is going to go for, and they're going to give something up and they're going to go up too high to try and get that player. And I don't think he does anything special. I think he does a lot of things well. I don't think he does anything special. And that's not something you give a whole bunch of ammunition up for to go and get that guy. So just don't do it. Either stay at 12 and take the best player, and hopefully somebody else is thirsty enough for a quarterback, they go up and get JJ McCarthy. Well, that knocks another good player back down to you at number 12. Or like yesterday, Jordan Reed on ESPN suggested, trade down with Philadelphia at 22. Perfect. That'd be a great move for the Broncos. Take an offensive lineman, take a pass rusher at 22 and get yourself a second round pick and just do something smart. That's what I hope for. Again, the content side of me is like, yeah, get drunk and go and get a guy. Right. But I can't see a path back to viability if that's the strategy for Denver, because they would just have to pay off too many future firsts. And Pat Surtain was the last first round pick that this organization made. We think they'll make one on Thursday. But if you give up like two future firsts after that, you're talking about like what? Like 5 years of drafting and two first round picks on your team? That's no way to live.
Yeah, and like there's part of me that thinks that this regime, most read Sean Payton and perhaps to some degree the ownership group, like they're like, we weren't the ones that traded, you know, four first and second round picks away for Russell Wilson. Sean Payton says like, I'm not the one that traded a first round pick for myself, which is of course backwards thinking, but I think that there's part of that thinking, right? Of like, we have to approach it in our own way. We can't, but you can't separate it because it's where your roster is. And it's the reason that it is that way, because you just haven't had these opportunities. Last thing I'll say is you mentioned Philadelphia. One spot that's interesting to me is 17. It's where the Jaguars are. They really need a playmaker. If a wide receiver, maybe they even like Brian Thomas Jr. a lot. Maybe Brock Bowers has fallen. That's a team you could trade back to 17, get that, and then their second round pick at 48. At that point, maybe you get a really good player. You could get Jared Verse, Leatu Latu at 17, and maybe Bo Nix or Michael Penix at 48. To me, that would be an ideal plan, because yeah, I mean, Bo Nix or Michael Penix might have every chance to be as good of a quarterback, right, if not better than JJ McCarthy. We just don't know. And so, obviously they're going to have their different idea of the grades of who those guys are. But the value of it has to be there too. And I just think it's just the better move, but we'll see. Last thing I'll ask you is if not a quarterback, who's the player at 12 that you would like to see? Do you have a favorite? Do you have a guy in this draft?
Yeah, I do. I do. There's actually a few, and they're not sexy picks. You mentioned Leatu Latu from UCLA, devastating athlete, strong as hell, and the Broncos aren't going to do anything without another quality pass rusher, and you're just not going to be able to survive enough on. They're all nice players, but Nick Bonino, Baron Browning, yeah, Jonathan Cooper, you can't live in that way. I don't know what Drew Sanders' future is going to be, whether it's going to be outside or inside. So I like Latu out of UCLA. JC Latham, the tackle from Alabama, is
huge.
He is so strong. He is an absolute monster. You might look at it and say, well, where does he play his rookie year? I don't know. That's a good problem to have if you have too much. Exactly. You could always do that too. Is having too much offensive line talent. So I would love to see that move made by the Broncos. Of course, I'm intrigued by Brock Bowers. I like him a lot more outside of the top 15 than in the top 15. Just that the tight end draft history is not particularly pretty to me. Latu, I like a lot. I like Jared Verse out of Florida State as well. Chop Robinson out of Penn State's a freak athlete, even though his production wasn't necessarily there. But I like edge rusher, or I like offensive line for the Broncos. Here's a question I have for you, Nick, before we wrap things up. Okay, we had that whole conversation, and yet, okay, if one quarterback were to fall out of, like, the top three, for example, maybe to Arizona at four, who is the one quarterback, obviously not Caleb Williams, that you would say, if it falls, you got to go get that guy? Who's that guy for you?
Jaden Daniels. I think it's just because I just think to be able to turn back and say we made a bet on a guy with just differentiating package of athletic talent, of playmaking ability. Mm-hmm. Like, he's the guy to me that most has the chance to look like somebody like Lamar Jackson, that just has that separating kind of it. That could make him a difference maker, especially in a division where you have those kind of presences at quarterback. He'd be the guy. But even with that said, yeah, like, is it up to four? That's to me, in my mind, that's still a bridge too far. Now, again, if he is what we're talking about, like, that's the whole part of this too.
Yeah.
If you're convinced he is what we're talking about, like, the Chiefs, they would give up twice what they gave up to do the same trade and get Patrick Mahomes. The Bills gave up 2 second rounders to move from 12 to 7 to draft Josh Allen. They'll give you their second rounders for the next decade if that's what it took to get him. So it's just like, that's the part of the game you play too. That's why, to your point, if they do it, we'll be jacked, because it's just like, holy cow, they did the thing, and now we get to talk about the thing for to come. You know, again, it's. I'm glad it's not my choice to make, because, yeah, holy cow, like, what hinges on this is incredible. But eager for Thursday, eager for Thursday to be done, so we just sort of know what's going on. But I'm sure we'll be talking about it again later this week with you, Nate. So appreciate you, man.
Coming any time, absolutely.
Yeah, yep.
So, by the way, and real quick, mine, Drake May. If Drake May falls, you go get him.
Yeah, that would have been the polite thing for me to do, would have been to ask you.
I love Drake May. I do. You flip on, like, that Georgia Tech game. Oh, my! Some of the throws that guy makes, it's hard not to just get really intrigued by what that guy could look like getting coached by Sean Payton. Plus, he's young, so I like that about him.
Yeah, 21. I mean, mm-hmm. Which is the only kind of, the other thing on McCarthy, like, 21. There's still some of that development there. The way I wrote it was, if you built him in a lab, if you built a quarterback in a lab, he'd look like Drake May. 6'4", 223, an arm that is not only a cannon, but it's elastic accurate as hell.
Yep.
It's accurate. He can throw it from, you know, behind his back.
Left every angle, whatever. Every platform. Yeah. He can throw on the move. Good pocket presence, you know, with the guy. You know, some wonky footwork and misses some layups. That's what Sean Payton is here for.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what coaching is there for. The physical gifts, like you said, it's a little too perfect when I look at that guy.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see Thursday night. We'll be back after the draft, after the first round, for another episode of the Not Another Bucking podcast. We are back. In the meantime, thanks for joining us. Until then, see you next time.